Growing up, I didn't go to church on Sunday mornings, but on Friday nights, both my mom and I would sit down and watch movies, and she would show them from a Christian perspective.
Growing up, we were out in the woods, so I didn't watch many movies, but I learned to look around me and find a spiritual lesson in everything I saw.
So now, I want you guys to experience the goodness of God in the movies we watch.
Join us as we unpack meaning from the movies we watch.
I'm movie apologist Clark.
And I'm Bethany.
And this is Movie Night Apologetics.
Well, what is up, movie lovers? Welcome back to the podcast that loves to show you the goodness of God in the movies we watch. And you know what? We're going to do something different today because most of the time, we usually tackle movies that aren't Christian-based. But today, that's all we're going to be talking about because we're going to be covering the four, I mean, some of them are more popular than others, but we're going to be covering four Christian movies, and we're going to be talking about the good, the bad, and what we would change about them. And they're going to be God's Not Dead, Fireproof, The Forge. And one of our listeners recommended this amazing movie called Church People. Shout out to Carlos. Thank you for the recommendation.
Thank you, Carlos.
And so we're going to just hit it off, and we're going to get started with God's Not Dead. And Bethany, why don't you give us the description of that movie, that wonderful movie?
Hey, okay. You can't keep using sarcasm because it doesn't translate. But God's Not Dead is about this student named Josh who won't sign a paper in his professor's class that says God is dead.
Dun, dun, dun. You don't do that. You just do what the professor says.
That's right. So this leads to him publicly debating this professor about whether or not God exists. And by the end of the movie, most of the students are convinced by Josh's arguments. And they stand up one by one and they say, God is not dead. And then they all go to a Newsboys concert.
Well, I don't know if all of them go to the Newsboys concert. Some of them do.
And they sing that song.
Yeah.
God's not dead. He's surely alive. Living on the inside, rolling like a dime.
But while they're singing that song, the professor gets hit by a car, and then somebody runs over and they're like, do you believe in Christ? And the professor's like, yes. The end.
That was a great impression of that scene.
It's pretty spot on.
Well, I would just want to start off and say what I like about it. And I the one thing that I can appreciate about that movie is the apologetics of it. I do think it has fairly good apologetics of kind of like if you're trying to figure out, you know, why there is evil in the world and, you know, figure out how God exists. I think there are some like good basic.
There were good points.
There were good points. Like one of the points was a moral argument. So if there is no God, let's just say that there is no God, and there is this thing that we as humans, we have morals. Like most of every culture has, you know, the morals of, you know, don't steal, don't murder, don't lie, don't, you know, have sex with someone else's spouse, that kind of thing. Like we all intrinsically have these morals within us, doesn't matter what the culture is. And that's because, like, you know, in Romans 2, it talks about God written the law on our hearts. And so that's one of the arguments. I'm not doing as good as Josh Wheaton did in the movie, but that's one of the arguments he makes, is that we know we can know God exists because we have a moral code in us and in everyone.
Makes sense.
It's like, why would we have that if there was no God? Like, who's to say killing's bad if there's no God?
Right. It's almost instinctual, which makes me think that it's programmed into us, which instinct is actually what convinced Thor Heyerdahl that God existed, because he was watching a spider build its web. And spiders just build webs on instinct. They're not taught how to do it by their mama spiders.
They don't go to spider school?
They don't go to spider school.
Wait. The more you know. So why did Spider-Man know? He kind of knew. Like, I mean, he went through trial and error, of course. with the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man.
Maybe that's why his life is so rough, because he doesn't have the spider instinct.
Yeah, he wasn't born a spider.
But anyways, Thor Heyerdahl was like, well, how do they know how to do that? And it's and the web is so perfect. They must have been programmed to do that by a creator.
Hmm. Yeah, that is really good. Yeah. And those webs, by the way, are really strong. Like, I try to blast some, like, webs while I'm cleaning, you know, some of the fence. And, like, they stay on. Dude, they're just like this little thing. And I'm like blasting water at it and they're just staying. I have to like hit my finger on it and then it goes away.
Yeah, the scientists are actually working with spider webs to try and create really cool fabrics or ropes. Like they're messing with it. It's going to be good.
Oh, that's cool. So yeah, that's one of the things I really appreciated about the film is just that the moral argument, the good apologetics behind it. And everything. Now, what I hated about this is going to be some shock to some people, even if you're, you know, agnostic atheist, because I actually really did not like that they depicted the angry atheist professor. I think it gave atheists kind of a bad name. You know, like if I'm watching a movie and there's this Christian in there and they're just like super judgmental, legalistic, and you know, you kind of get the feeling like the whoever wrote it that's how they depict all Christians. Well, that wouldn't be fair. That wouldn't be accurate. And so, like, and I know the people that wrote this probably didn't think that, but that's just kind of the vibe it came across, is like, oh, here's this angry atheist and all atheists are like this. And it's like, come on, like, can we give atheists a little bit more credit? Like, yes, there are angry atheists. Yes, there are Christians that are legalistic, but that's not the entirety or the whole totality of people who believe, right?
Right. Yeah, I agree. And I want to take this time to make a caveat that we are not trying to tear down other Christians. Mm. We think that the biggest problem with the church today is that people keep saying, well, the biggest problem with the church today. Like, why do Christians have to be so stinking critical of Christians? Guys, we're on the same side.
Yeah.
And when, like, people were spreading the gospel in a way that the disciples didn't approve of, Jesus wasn't like, shut them down.
He was like, well, therefore, if they're not against me, they're for me or something. I can't remember the exact words he said.
If they're not against me, then they're for me.
Right.
Yeah. We're not trying to drag down other Christians. We're just saying, hey, this is stuff that could have been improved on.
Yeah. And one thing I want to like just kind of like do a side tangent, this wasn't in the notes, is one reason that we don't do Christian movies that often is because most of the time, the message is pretty cut and dry in the Christian movies. Like,
the name of the movie was Don't Lie, and it was about not lying.
Exactly. Whereas if you get like a movie, The Whale, right? There's so much meaning and depth in those. There's a lot of like themes in it that you just have to kind of draw out of. And like Christian movies,
they tend to kind of beat you over the head with the moral.
It's just like kind of a preaching at the gospel, which, you know, it's not like terrible. I'm glad that they're trying to get the gospel out there to people who are searching and seeking God. But
it makes it artistically not very interesting.
Why do you say that? I'm actually curious. Like, why do you think it's not as artistic?
The same reason why a mystery suspense book is not artistic in the way that Moby Dick by Herman Melville is.
I've never read that book, but
I love that book. You would hate it.
I probably would, because it's probably wordsy. You told me like one of the chapters was just him describing the whales or something.
Whaling, the process of whaling.
Oh, what process of whaling.
And, well, The Whale, the movie that you were just talking about, was kind of about Moby Dick. But the reason why I love that book is it really delights in language.
Mm.
The author takes so much time to describe things in a beautiful and original way. The language is almost soothing, the way that he uses words. It's absolutely a work of art. And then the plot itself, it's not totally clear who's doing right, who's doing wrong. Mm. It's a bit of a thinker. Whereas in a modern day mystery suspense book, you're going to get from the first chapter, you know who the good guy is, who the bad guy is, what's right. going to happen, mm. how things are going to play out. And you read it and you're like, okay. And then you toss it aside and forget about it.
Right. We clearly, in God's Not Dead, understood who the good guy was and who the bad guy was in a manner of 5 minutes of the film. Like, Christian, who doesn't want to discount or to throw away his belief for a professor, and the professor that's trying to get him to throw away his belief. And that's the other thing that it drove me nuts, because I've been to college. We've both been to college at U of I. I've taken philosophy 101. You've probably taken philosophy 101.
I had the 8 a.m. class.
Oh, okay.
The professor hated me.
Did he tell you to write God's Dead on a piece of paper?
This movie was actually based on my interactions with him.
Oh, really? Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it probably wasn't the same professor, but I've been to a philosophy 101, and it was nothing like this movie did. Like, it was totally exaggerated. Now, again, like, our last movie is going to be totally exaggerated, but I actually think it's kind of funny because it's a comedy. But anyways, we'll get back to that. But one of the things that I would change about this movie is if the professor was more of an agnostic and he was trying to seek and search for God, but he didn't really know where to begin. Like, he knew all these different religions, these different philosophies. And so he decides to hold up debates in his philosophy class. And one of the debates would be between an atheist and a Christian. And they would debate. And then the Christian would talk to the professor, and they would have like a relationship about like their beliefs, and the professor is trying to understand the Christian's view. I don't know, something like that. To
a
make
little bit more of a mild approach.
Yes, exactly. So I don't know. That's kind of what I would change about the film. That's what I liked and hated. But I'm curious what your thoughts are on this.
One of the things I really like about this movie is how triumphant and positive it feels to watch it as a Christian.
Yeah, the Christian clearly won. Yeah, suck it, atheist.
We are the champions. You guys suck. Yeah, I don't think it would be a very fun film for other faiths to watch.
No.
But it's very affirming as a Christian to watch this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely a feel good film. On the flip side of that feel goodness is it's so unrealistic that everybody has a happy ending.
Mm-hmm. You know? The atheist converts and is with Jesus in the end. The guy, what was the minister? He, I don't know, feels important that he's helped someone come to Christ. And then the other guy, Josh Wheaton, he convinced one of the kids in his class that Jesus was real, and that kid became a Christian because of what Josh did.
Right.
That sort of thing. Like, everything just had a happy ending.
Yes, and the gospel just spread like wildfire. And the only bad thing that really happened in the end was the professor got run over by a car. But he was an atheist, so it's okay.
Well, and he did convert at the end. He was a thief on the cross, so it's all good.
Then it's fine.
Yeah, it's all good. I mean, it would have sucked if he, didn't. He's like, oh, screw you. And
isn't that kind of funny that it doesn't feel like a tragedy that he gets hit by a car at the end?
Yeah.
It doesn't. It just feels kind of dramatic.
Right. It just feels kind of out of left field. They're like, man, how are we going to end this? I know. Let's just have him walk across the street and get hit by a car. And then all of a sudden, like the car that hit him, the car that was behind the car that hit him had the priest in there. And he's going to go up and say, hey, believe in Jesus. And the guy converts.
Yes.
It's just like while they're going to a Newsboys concert or something. Woo! That was kind of unclear if they were going to a Newsboys concert. I think they were, but.
Or going to it or coming from it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know the exact timeline. It was kind of the editing at the end there was kind of weird.
True. But I have the fix for this.
Oh, film. Okay. I want to hear this.
Okay. So get this. They have the debate and the professor wins.
Mm.
Okay. But he doesn't feel totally right about it. Josh, meanwhile, is having a crisis of faith. Because if he can't argue well enough to prove that God exists, then does God exist? Since the professor won the debate, he's feeling good enough to actually consider some of the points that Josh brought up. And when he starts encountering experiences that he can't explain away rationally, he opens his mind to the possibility of a spiritual world.
Hmm.
So since he's a rational person, he decides to experiment with that. And he does this by praying for something specific. And then that specific thing happens. He doesn't know what to do next. So he goes to Josh to ask for advice. Josh is still in a season of doubt. But hearing about the answered prayer kind of affirms his faith. Mm. And they decide to learn more about God together.
Mm. You want to know or you want to hear something that is going to be totally out of left field? I do think, I'm not saying I agree with atheists, but I can see where they're coming from when there are certain points that they bring up. And I guess see, you know what? That's actually a good point. I never thought of it quite like that. One of the times being I went to this debate at U of I, and it was this atheist and this Christian, and they were talking about suffering. And the one Christian obviously brings up Job in the Bible. And the atheist made a really good statement about the ending of Job that I've never considered. And I still think it's really good. He's like, because, you know, Christians will say, well, you know, God, like, obviously there was suffering in Job, but, you know, God restored his family and got his livestock and all that back, all his wealth and whatnot back. And the atheist is like, you know, you can't replace the ones you lose. So he lost to, you know, his sons, daughters, whatever, right?
Right.
And, you know, Job gets, you know, kids in the future after right, the suffering. Right,
he has more sons and daughters.
And the atheist brought up a good point. It's like, okay, but you, like, if we were to lose Carver and Alora and, you know, our kids, some horrific event in, like, a car accident, and then...
It'd be fine, though, if I got them, like, just the new kids, you know?
I mean,
a new version of them. Like, that'd be, I wouldn't be sad anymore.
No. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Like, if we have, I mean, obviously,
I'm joking.
I know. Yeah. We can't have kids because I have had the snip surgery last year. But if we, you know, lost them and then somehow we got kids down the road, you know, like, those kids don't replace the ones we lost.
Yeah.
So, and I thought that was actually a really good argument. It doesn't mean that God doesn't exist or anything, but I could just see where the atheist was coming from in that.
Yeah, honestly, it was a bad point that the Christian brought up. Because
it was a horrible point.
God's response to suffering is not, well, I'll give you stuff to make you feel better.
That sounds kind of like prosperity.
A little bit.
Anyways, yeah, but... No, I think those were good points that you brought up. So now we're going to move on to Fireproof.
Yeah.
And why don't you, for our listeners who haven't watched Fireproof in years, why don't you give them the description of it?
Caleb is a firefighter who's headed toward divorce with his wife, Catherine. They have been fighting over dumb stuff. They have different priorities in life. Caleb's addicted to porn, and Catherine is kind of toying with the idea of having an affair. So Caleb's dad challenges him to do the love dare.
I'm sorry. It's so bad.
You can change the meaning on how you say it. The love dare.
Anyways,
So that's where essentially he does something nice
once a day for 40 days.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
So by doing this, he eventually realizes that he's been a big poo-poo head, and he repents. Catherine doesn't realize that it's an authentic repentance until she finds out that he gave up the money he'd been saving up to buy a boat to buy her parents some hospital equipment. They both become Christians, and they renew their wedding vows because they love each other again.
All right, so I'm going to talk about what I like about it before I know what I want to hear about it. I do like that Caleb's not giving up on his marriage, even though he is kind of the one that caused it, right?
Yeah, he caused the problem.
He caused the problem.
That's how I would view it.
Yeah, and so I do like that aspect of it because I do think to a certain extent there are a lot of people in the world, especially in Western society, where, you know, they just give up and they don't fight for it. I think that's admirable, and I applaud that.
Don't you love the scene where he's got that ring on his finger after he comes out of fire, and the doctor's like, "Oh, you should take that off," and he's like, "What did he say?"
He's like, "I don't know what he said. We haven't watched the movie in a while. Watched it 5 times or whatever in my life, but I can't."
You can take this off of my finger when I'm dead. I don't know. I don't remember what he said. But it was very stirring, whatever he did say.
Yeah. And it was the doctor that his wife was attracted to. And he's like, after it, he looks in his drawer, he puts on his wedding ring, and he's like, and throws it back in the drawer. Like, what a sleazeball, you little doctor.
Pretty sleazy.
But, you know... And I did look at some of your notes on this, and I would agree with you. They like,
you can't read my notes and then talk about them before I've talked about them.
All right, fine. I like what you said about it, but anyways, I'll do mine and then we'll talk about yours.
Thank you.
Okay. So what I hated about it is he just wins his battle against porn. Without having any sort of relapse. He did have temptation, but then he so kindly beat his computer with a bat, which have done similar things before. Like in college, I would take the Ethernet cord and I would cut the wire. The problem is you can just go to Walmart and buy a new wire. I mean,
you actually broke your smartphone the first year that we were married. You did it on purpose, and I actually saved it. I have it in an album.
You do, yeah. But I didn't, like, it was just, it's really unrealistic with him winning the battle that easily. Like, I'm just being straight up honest with you, with someone who struggled with it for years. I mean, it's a ongoing thing. I'm sure there are people that have done that where it's just, you know, they just give it up and then never do it again. I'm sure. But the ideal of that is it's not most guys. It's just not. And, you know, some guys like take a really long time to like climb out of it. And I'm not making an excuse for it. It's just, that's the reality of it.
It's an addiction.
I mean, especially now, like him back then, because I looked this up, this movie was made in 2007. I'm assuming this time period was set at the same time the movie was made. So in 2007, they initially made this movie roughly, it was like a year, 10 months before the iPhone came out.
Okay.
So people, especially men today, when they're watching this and they see this triumphant victory of this guy overcoming porn, well, great. Like, I mean, the iPhones did came out later.
Right.
But
he didn't on the computer
but,
anymore.
But he didn't have as big of a temptation.
He didn't have as much access. Exactly. Is what you're saying.
Like, you know, you go back, you know, 50 something years from now, you know, back in the 70s, right? Like,
that was only 30 years ago.
What? Do you know how to do math?
I'm making a joke.
Okay. Thank goodness. Anyways, you go back in that time, like, you had to go through X amount of like stuff to get access to pornography.
Right.
Now it's just within two clicks, I can get it.
Right.
And so, and it always makes me think of that verse, and people are going to be like, well, you can't take that verse out of context because the next verse said, God, you know, Paul says, you know, we shouldn't be sinning that grace may abound. But I do think that there is an exuberant an immense amount. See, I knew you were going to do this.
Exuberant's not a word.
It's not a word. I thought it was a word. There's an immense, it's immense, fine.
That's a word.
Okay. There's an immense amount of grace where there's a lot of temptation, I think. Like, you know, you go in this time, there's so much temptations for guys. Mm-hmm. And I think where sin abounds, grace abounds all the more. Where temptation abounds, grace abounds all the more. Now, that doesn't mean we are licensed to do it, but I'm just saying that I think there's extra grace for us in this time.
Probably like an exuberant amount of grace.
Shut your pothole. So, yeah, I just think like, yeah, it was great for the time. But, you know, you look at back at that, like his struggles back then aren't the same struggles that we have now.
Gotcha.
He broke a computer. All right. Well, he didn't have an iPhone in his pocket. So that's kind of what I hated about it. It just doesn't fit for the time.
So if you were the movie editor, what would you change?
So I don't want to advocate for divorce by any means. I do think there is certain reasons why women should leave a guy and get divorced or vice versa. And that is, you know, extramarital affairs, abuse for sure.
Abandonment,
like those things. And so I don't advocate for it. We don't advocate for it. But I do think this would have made a more compelling story and a more realistic one, if I'm being honest. If Caleb was he was addicted to pornography, and then he is trying to get out of it, but the wife was just like, I can't do this anymore. It's been years you've been using, and you know, I don't know if other stuff goes on, but it also looked like in the film he also had a little bit of anger issues. So there could have been, like, they kind of briefly touched on it. And so, but usually, there's probably some physical, emotional abuse in that.
Yeah, she definitely has her walls up to defend herself from his anger.
Right. So I could see most of the time in that kind of relationship, I could see it ending up in divorce. And there's this stigma in the Christian culture of like, oh, if you get divorced, you're just like tainted with sin. Like, you know, people get excommunicated for it. Like, I've listened to the Sons of Patriarchy podcast and whatnot. Like, people do get shunned. They get excommunicated from their community because they went through a divorce. And I think we really have to look at the context of the situation and the gravity of the situation, because I think it would have been really good in some ways, not to say that they think it's right, the writers think it's right to get divorced, but to say, hey, this, you know, the separation happened. Now Caleb, he's going to what's that meeting called? Celebrate Recovery. He's going to Celebrate Recovery. He's figuring out his faith, and he's getting involved with the people in the church, and they're loving him in this process.
I like that, because it could show the individual is more important than the marriage.
Yeah.
Because I think we've gotten that flipped a lot of the time.
Right. We are so willing to save the marriage, but lose people's personhood, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like if a woman is in an abusive relationship, well, she should just stay in the abusive relationship because she made a vow before God and she should not break that vow. And it's like, okay, if she's getting beat, if she's getting verbally abused, if her man is just continually to cheat on her or abandon her, like, I'm sorry, but she has every right to walk away. That's mm-hmm. just my opinion.
Yeah.
And when it says in the Old Testament that God hates divorce, like, let's think about it. Why do you hate divorce? It's because women and children were abandoned and left screwed in those societies. And he hated that men could just walk away and leave them. Mm. So it you really have to look at the context of that.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's hard to follow up on that because that was a very good, powerful point. And now I have to go back into my fluffy points. What I liked about Fireproof is that it has a realistic slow fade into the problems, like Catherine's Affair.
It's a slow fade when you give yourself away.
We're so musical tonight. I think it was, you know, the slow fade of it took time for Caleb to be earnest about trying to win his wife back.
Mm. Yeah, it was. Yeah, I would agree. It wasn't just a transition. Like he was kind of struggling through that process. I did appreciate that.
Unlike a movie we will be talking about soon. It actually took him some time to change. I really loved the scene where Caleb was taking care of his wife while she was sick.
Mm, that was a good scene.
Yeah, he didn't expect anything in return. He didn't even ask her what she needed. He just went and got everything she could possibly need and took care of her.
That was Dude, he sweet. Blew a lot of money spending so much on medicine without her needing it. But I guess I'll have it in the future.
Yeah, you can leave it in the medicine cabinet. It's fine. Now, what I didn't like about the movie was that Catherine came off as being very unlikable.
And that's the one I wanted to talk about with you because I would agree. It was like you were more sympathetic with him versus her. And mm-hmm. I really don't like that.
Yeah. It seemed like she just wasn't being responsive to any of the wonderful things that Caleb was mm-hmm. doing. And I think what we needed was just a little more background on why she was responding that way, because we didn't see the years of him being angry and having a temper, yelling at her over silly little things, keeping all the money that they made to himself to save up for this boat while her parents are suffering.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. They imply all these things, but you don't see the soft part of Catherine until the very end of the movie.
Yeah.
So there was a part of me that was kind of rooting for this marriage to fail because I didn't like Catherine. I was like, this guy is doing wonderful stuff. He should be with a woman who appreciates it. And I think it's just
that she was poorly portrayed. So you weren't rooting for Catherine?
No. No, not till
the yeah. end. Well, and that's the thing. I wasn't rooting for her, but now knowing what I know about abuse in relationships and in marriage, from what I've listened to, I'd be more willing to root for her. And I can understand where she's coming from with wanting the affair because she just wants a guy that wants to love her. I mean, obviously the guy was a sleazeball because he was married and was thinking about it himself. So like the dude wasn't even, I don't like
But he was being gentle and interested in her problems. And that's you wanted. You wanted somebody to listen.
Yeah. Uh-huh, yeah. He's being gentle. Come on. The dude had one thing on his mind. All right.
Like He came off as gentle.
But like the dude had clearly ulterior motives.
Ulterior? Oh my, how devious. Anyways, I do really like this movie and I liked the happy ending. So I wouldn't make huge changes to this movie, but I would remove the subplot with Caleb's parents. It just felt really wooden and extra.
Yeah, that didn't need to be in there.
Yeah.
I agree.
That is what made it feel like a little bit too Christian of a film. That's where like the moral started getting beating you over the head.
Well, son, I didn't use it on her. She used it on me. But Dad, I've treated her so wrong.
Mom, I was wrong about you. Oh. I love you.
Oh, and then cuts to the giving the vows.
Yeah. So just that, and then expand on how the marriage got to that point where we saw them at the beginning.
Yeah, I don't know. I like both of our alternate endings of this one, if I'm going to be honest. So our next movie is going to be the latest and greatest of the Kendrick brothers, which I personally, I like the Kendrick brothers and them making movies.
We'll always watch what they put out.
Yeah, I'll always watch it because like their production, I mean, not at first, but the production now is definitely on par with Hollywood and what they produce. I mean,
sure, it seems like it.
I mean, it's pretty good. Like, I do like the acting is pretty good and everything, but I do feel like the last few of them have, I mean, you and I watched the pro-life one, and that was just...
That was the Kendrick brothers?
Yes, that was the Kendrick brothers, unfortunately.
Oh,
they
wow.
didn't get picked. It didn't get picked up as much because they talked about the sensitive subject of abortion.
Not really.
But, you know, to be honest with you, I don't think it got picked up because the story kind of sucked.
There was no conflict.
There was I've never seen a movie with zero conflict in it. And I was just like, how in the world, like, did this movie get made? Like, it was just all lovey-dovey the whole time. And then at the very end, the kid finds out that his mother was thinking about aborting him. And he was just like, oh, it's okay, Mom. Like, I love you.
So the movie was called Life Mark.
Life Mark, yeah. And, oh,
his adopted parents loved him. His adopted siblings loved him. His birth mom loved him. Everybody loved him. The end.
I would hate to say we're exaggerating, but we're not. Like, that's literally how the movie went. It was just horrible. I appreciated the message that they're trying to give, but the movie itself was horrible. Anyways, we're going to talk about The Forge. So, Bethany...
So in The Forge, we have Isaiah. He is a no good 19-year-old man boy.
That no good video gamer.
That's right.
That likes to play basketball more than his mama wants him to.
And he doesn't pay his mama no rent.
Wow.
Even though he has been out of high school for a whole year.
Mm-mm. I tell you what, though, like I would agree with her a little bit. Like if Carver was 19 years old living in our house, like, boy's getting a job and paying us rent. So anyways.
Well, we can talk about that. So Isaiah ends up getting a job from Joshua, who decides to mentor Isaiah. And after a couple of little snafus, like showing up to work late one time, Isaiah starts showing up to work. He pays his rent and he wears button-up shirts. He joins Joshua's men's group, which calls itself The Forge, which is all dudes that Joshua mentored, and now they're mentoring other guys. Isaiah is now a Christian, and he's a stand-up guy, and he lands Joshua a great contract for his business.
Wow. So what I appreciated about this film is the kid, after he... follows Jesus, helps his mom out with the chores. I'm not gonna lie, that'd be amazing if our kids helped us out with chores without asking them or without demanding it or without nagging them. They are also 8 and 4. They're not 19, but still, I mean, that would be
amazing.
That would be a dream. So I really appreciated that. Like,
I mean, anytime Alora picks up her room. Just because she wants it to be picked up, I feel a little teary.
Is that her doing that?
She does that.
Oh.
She likes her bed being made. Sometimes she's like, Mom, help me make my bed. I want it to be nice.
I love that. It's just, I love things picked up and clean. And so when kids do that, it's just like, oh.
I love you, my child.
So I appreciated that. What I hated about it, and the list is more than the liked, it's not realistic for most people who come to faith in Christ. Like, just like the Caleb thing where he just gives up on pornography, has a little bit of temptation, beats the crap out of the computer. Like, this kid, like, it's not realistic. Because I think most of our Christian walks is there's this little thing, as theologians like to call it, sanctification. And it's basically the process of becoming more like Jesus throughout your life. And guess what? That doesn't really happen in a matter of a couple of months.
Realistically, can a young man go from being a mumbly, disrespectful, purposeless person to a professional wearing polos and chatting with businessmen?
Right, and landing million-dollar contracts for 5 years.
Like, does that happen within a few months?
The unrealicity.
You are really making up a lot of words tonight, but Shakespeare did that too. So,
hey, I'm on to say, hey, you know what? How does a word become a word? Someone says it, and then it just catches on, and then they make a definition for it, right? Like,
but can you remember all the words you've made up?
Yeah, heck no.
Okay, so I don't know if they're going to catch.
But it was just unrealistic. A lot of us, we can't relate to that kind of thing. I think that's why a lot of people, if you were asking them, who's your favorite disciple of all the disciples, right? Like, most people are going to say Peter, or they're going to say David, because those two, they were man after God's own hearts, but they also fell extremely. And like, what is it in First Samuel or something? We often say, well, David was a man after God's own heart. Well, you know where that verse is located? It was located before he even killed the dang Goliath, or maybe it was shortly after, but it was definitely before David and Bathsheba and him killing Uriah, or having Uriah killed and sleeping with Bathsheba, Uriah's wife. So that was before the whole David scandal, or the scandal of David. Does that make sense?
What are you getting at?
What I'm getting at is that it's like saying, well, Clark was a man after God's own heart. And then, you know, I slept around and killed the dude. Right. So like this guy, like they're always depicting people like Caleb, right? He's a porn addict and then he becomes a Christian. And so, and then he just,
oh, you're saying it can be in the reverse. Like you become a Christian and then you fall.
Yes.
David was a man after God's heart, and mm-hmm. then he made a mistake.
Exactly. Okay. Whereas in these movies, The Forge and Fireproof especially, is like, oh, they come to Jesus and everything turns out fine and dandy. And I'm just like, have you read the Bible? Like,
have you, like, lived life?
I get it that you're changed and you're new. I totally get that. And David, he was repentant of his sin, of what he did with Bathsheba and Uriah. But he was also a follower of God when he did those horrible things.
True.
But for some reason, the Christian writers, and I think that's why I don't like these movies don't land as well, is because they depict this kind of unrealistic following of Christ of like, well, when you become a Christian, this is what happens. You button up, you like talk real fancy, and you land, like there's no falling. So yeah. that was my problem with those movies. It no one can relate to them.
That's really sad.
And that's what makes the Bible so great, is because we, as people, we can relate to this. We can relate to Peter, who says, yeah, I'm with you, Lord. And then the next minute he denies Jesus. Or we could be like David and be like, yeah, I'm going to like slay that Goliath, but then sleeps with Bathsheba. Like, you know, I'm going to serve the Lord, but then fall into my addiction and pornography for the 10,000th time and, you know, go to have help in my recovery process with like talking to men about it, going to the meetings, all, that sort of thing. Like,
it's a process.
It's a process.
Don't become sanctified overnight. That's actually a little bit prosperity gospel.
It is. It's like, come to Jesus and your life's going to be perfect. And even in Paul, like, you know, Paul, it's a little bit harder to relate to him because we don't see his problems. But even Paul, he's like, I'm the chief of sinners. Like, the things that I do, I don't want to do. Or, in the whole Romans 7 debacle where he's struggling with his inner man. We don't know what he was struggling with, what sin he was, had temptations or battling.
Well, he had fights with the other disciples.
Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of it was pride.
Yeah, could have been.
Like, but we don't really know. But he said it himself in Romans 7. Like, there's things that he struggled with. And so it's just totally unrealistic to me. Anyways, I'll go off my rant here.
Okay. What would you change about the movie?
What I would change is to make it more compelling is that he like comes to faith in Christ. He's really excited, changes his life around. Like, I do think when we come to Jesus, you know, some more than others, there is a form of change in us. Little, small, big, whatever. But then, you know, he kind of meets this girl at church and they get to know each other. But then they're like, no, we should wait. Like, it's not the Christian thing to do. But then, like, they fall into temptation and she gets pregnant. And now they're trying to figure out, okay, like, what happens if our parents find out? Like, maybe we should, go have an abortion. Like, they have that talk. Or, you know, how, and then, like, the church comes around and they adore these people. They say, hey, you know, what you did was clearly wrong, but we're going to be by your side in this and walk you through this. And I think that would have been
a lot more powerful.
And a lot more powerful, because I think there are a lot of Christians in the church where that could happen.
I've seen that happen before, where people got that kind of support from the church. And it's really beautiful. And I don't think it's talked about very much. Mm-mm. Like we were talking about earlier, we're all so good at criticizing the church. And I don't see a whole lot of people saying, here's what the church did for me, and shouting it from the rooftops. But
exactly,
I have been to more than one baby shower put on for a woman who was pregnant out of wedlock.
Shocking.
Yes, shocking in this day and age.
It's like, people, I get it, it's a sin. But remember the guy in the Old Testament I talked about, David, who's a man after God's own heart? The dude had like 1,000-something wives and concubines. I'm just saying, like, give some grace for people who, you know, fall in that sin and love them and show them God's love. Like, don't just be like, all those dirty, filthy, rotten sinners, they need to repent of, you know. Like, show them love, show them decency and respect. And you don't have to agree with what happened.
No.
But
they're an eternal soul who God loves, and we should love them. Love does not mean approval.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love my kids. I don't approve of them pooping in their pants.
I don't approve of that either.
And you know what? There's a whole lot of people out there pooping in their pants, metaphorically. And that doesn't mean that I have to love them less.
Yeah, right. Anyways, so that's what I would change about the movie. What would you like and hate and change about this movie?
I liked that in the movie, they made that decision to go over and above to save their company that they worked for.
That was really good. I did like that.
Yeah. There's sort of a trend to disassociate yourself from your employer and the company you work for. Like, oh, this company will never take care of me. And there's truth to that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But they realized that what was good for the company was good for them. And that company was also funding nonprofits.
Well, truth be told, though, they also knew the owner of that company personally. And so they knew to some extent, like, he's going to reward them for what they did.
Oh, that's a good point.
So, yeah, if, you know, the company went well.
Yeah. So they decided to make themselves uncomfortable for a short period of time because they saw the true struggle and they just went for it. They decided to take care of it.
Yeah.
I thought that was really beautiful. What I did not enjoy about it. So in this movie, Isaiah's dad had left him a Mustang or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he's got this broken old car sitting in the garage and he keeps intending to do something about it, fix it up eventually. But when he starts paying his mom rent, she saves the rent money and uses it to pay somebody to fix the Mustang. So it gets all fixed up beautiful, looks like new, and she shows him the Mustang, and Isaiah is so grateful and excited, and his mom starts crying and praying.
And well, it was Priscilla Shire, so I mean...
it didn't make sense to me as a response, because she's like thanking the Lord and praying that he'll always be a good person. And
you wouldn't do that? I don't think I would do that. I'm just being honest.
The way that it would translate to me doing something like this is if I went to the store and bought Iroh a Hot Wheels car and handed it to him. And then he was like really excited. And I started praying, God always bless this wonderful child, because he's excited that I bought him a Hot Wheel. It's not the worst thing, but it's just a weird response. Well,
heaven forbid she pray for a son because he loves the car.
It's just too Christian-y. Okay, that's a little too Christian-y for me.
It's too shiny, happy people.
It's too shiny, happy people. With the change, I completely agree with you. I want to see backsliding. I want to see struggle.
I want to see scandal in this, sir. Like, I don't want to... Okay, like, they made this whole other, like, subplot backstory of the guy who is mentoring... I forget the kid's name.
Isaiah.
He was mentoring Isaiah, but then he had this other guy in the group, and that guy... What'd he kill his wife? Like, didn't the guy in the group, like, run over and kill his son or...
Oh.
He killed one of his family members. And
I can't believe I forgot that.
Yeah. And then the guy just like, yep, you know, I ran over and he like, he forgave me. And it's like, why does it all have to be buttoned up perfect? Like, why can't the guy that just runs over the person, like, I don't know, not come to Jesus, but the guy still forgives him anyway. And it's moved on. Like, why does everything have to be like, yep, and they came to Jesus. All the atheists came to Jesus. I just it doesn't work that way, people. My goodness.
Tied up with a little bow.
It's not like I get there are miracles. I get people come to Jesus, but oh my goodness. It just...
I think it would be okay overboard for that guy to have a different mentor than the father of the kid he killed on accident. That would have been more realistic.
Yeah.
But honestly, the whole Forge meeting felt really weird to me. So
it felt like a cult.
Yeah. Like a Masonic leadership thing.
It was like just a little bit too weird. Like, guys don't interact like that way with one another. I'm just straight up. Like, we don't. At least my guys don't.
You know, like the way that they had it set up, all these guys are coming in and they each have their little protege with them sitting on their side.
We're going to take a sword. This is a sword for you, son, to hang above your fireplace someday and give to your other protege.
Like, it's just a little too organized to feel right. I would want to see a group of guys with more apparent flaws, a little less tidy.
Yeah.
No obvious mentor-mentee relationships, because that's not exactly how it works. I know people talk about discipleship like it's just this one-on-one forever.
Even Paul talks about in Romans 1, he's like, you know, I want to come to you that you all, like, that we may be mutually encouraged by each other's faith. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Paul writes the letters and he has a spiritual authority within all these churches he's writing to. But even him, he's like, man, I need some encouragement from you guys.
Yeah. It's not like one person has the answers. He's not a
hierarchy kind of guy.
Yeah. I don't think it should be that way. And it's even if one person is obviously the teacher, it's not going to be so tidy as one mentor, one mentee. You're going to have a lot of crossover, right? Like, you have been discipled a lot by our pastor, Scott.
Yes.
But you've also been discipled by Derek.
Mm-hmm.
And by, like, your guy friends who you hang out with.
Yeah.
With really cool coworkers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot more crossover than
just this one mentor,
yeah. one mentee.
Right. And then, oh, that guy makes a disciple, and that guy makes a disciple of that guy. And I've seen this process somewhere before.
Yeah. Isn't that like how they make robots?
I mean, I get like, the scripture does say, like, you know, go and make disciples of all nations. But, you know, it's not like, I don't know, it's not cut and dry.
I've heard that should be translated as you go.
As you go. Yeah.
Disciple all nations. Mm-hmm. So it's more like being the light wherever you're at.
Yeah. Exactly. You're
not going out with a net and literally catching one person and being like, you shall be my protege. You shall be the perfect Christian imitation of myself.
Oh, man. This has been a fun episode. Should we talk about the great... to be honest, out of all these movies, my favorite was Church People.
It's really good.
And here's the reason why. Because it was strictly a comedy... And because it's a comedy, it's put in another level of, hey, it's a comedy. Obviously, this is just going to be so exaggerated. Like, it's not trying to be realistic. Like, it's just exaggerated for the sake of being funny. And so why don't you give us the description of this?
Okay, the main character's name is Guy. That alone is great. Guy is a youth pastor who's been touring the country giving sermons, and he realized that he's been giving in a little too much to gimmicks to get the kids to listen when he becomes known as the beach ball guy. They're just throwing beach balls around while he's trying to talk about the gospel. So he gives it up and he goes back to his church where the senior pastor is the over the top gimmick guy. The pastor believes they should do whatever it takes to get people in the door to hear the gospel. So he decides that for their Easter service, they're literally going to crucify someone. And at first, he wants it to be Guy. Guy does not want to do it. So a very eager new convert who is like 16 years old.
I love that guy. He's so good.
He volunteers to be crucified on Easter. So there's a whole fiasco. Like, they're trying all these different ways to keep the senior pastor from actually crucifying somebody on stage during Easter service at a mega church. And what they end up doing is the guy admits that he has given into gimmicks and he misses when it was about Jesus and about living and authenticity.
Yeah.
And then that inspires other people to stand up and talk about that.
Well, how it ended and because I was like, how is this going to end? Because... it was literally like all these other movies that we've talked about. We kind of knew how they were going to end. Like, honestly, I knew the marriage was going to be fine and fireproof. I knew the atheist was going to convert. I knew the kid was, you know, going to seal the deal with the big million-dollar corporation people. Like, I knew how it was going. This movie, like, I was trying to guess, like, how the crap is this going to end? Like, I literally was trying to figure out, and I couldn't until the ending where he gets up and he's like, the guy says, like, there is going to be a crucifixion today. And he gets the nail. I'm like, oh, okay, we're going this route. All right. Yeah. Like, I did not see this coming.
I was like, oh, substitutionary atonement.
And then he, does he nail a picture of himself on the
I think,
cross?
Is it his poster?
His poster.
Yeah.
Yeah, he nails a picture of himself on the cross. And he's like, I was chasing something. I don't remember the exact quote. But he's basically saying, like, I liked this too much. And I need to die to liking, you know, the fame and the fortune that was all wrapped up with me going to these conferences. Mm-hmm. And I loved that because he wasn't pointing at the stupid pastor. I'm just going to say it. The guy was an idiot for wanting a real life crucifixion. I get it. It's a comedy and everything. But he could have been like, this guy is a heretic. He's a false teacher. But he points it back on himself and he's like, I need to die to this. And then that gets other people say, yeah, I need. One guy's like, I've been watching football games during your sermon for the last 15 years. Like, I really wish they would have drove the nail through that radio. Like, oh, I was like, man, what a missed opportunity there. Anyways, but I just loved like him just admitting about like his pride and his ego. And it caused others to be vulnerable. Yeah. And even at the end, the pastor dude says, he takes off his shirt and he's like, you know, this was my identity. And I just thought that out of all the Christian movies I've seen, that has been the best message. Because I think in our day, you know, I look at Christian videos. They'll be like, well, this person's a dangerous heretic with their teachings and but what happened here was they pointed the guy pointed the finger on himself rather than pointing it at the other believers.
Yeah.
I just that was moving. Mm-hmm. I did not see that coming. I did not see how profound it was. Or when I watched the trailer, I was like, oh man, this, like, Carlos, why are you recommending this to us, pal? Like, this is like, I don't want another one of those, like, you know, stupid Christian church movies that's just gonna have a crappy like message. But like, it really was a quite profound movie.
Yes. Thank you, Carlos.
Thank you. Like, one of the best Christian movies I've watched in a while. And it was truly, truly hilarious.
Yeah. It was extra funny to me because I worked for a church for 7 years and we've never talked about crucifying somebody, but we've had just the similar flavor of conversations, the similar flavor of people come through. And it was really interesting to see that put in this over exaggerated manner.
Yeah. The only issue that I saw with the film was I thought the gal, the daughter meeting guy, when she went to the church, I thought that was, it wasn't done really well. Like, there wasn't much emotion to it. It's like, oh, you're my dad, and okay, let's be pals kind of deal. Like, I don't know if you had any thoughts on that relationship. I thought that was a little bit meh. I almost wonder if they could have done something different there. But I guess they had to drive the plot of like, hey, let's let guy denounce his leadership here because it turns out he had a child out of wedlock, so we can't, you know, have him in leadership.
Right. I kind of liked that he was chill about her.
Mm.
I think it was kind of beautiful because he didn't put any pressure on her.
I'm saying her.
Oh,
not
she
him.
Wasn't emotional.
Yeah, she wasn't as emotional, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
She was a little bit more reserved.
Hmm.
Yeah. You know, not out giddy and weepy or anything. She was just holding herself back.
Yeah.
Which I think made it more realistic.
Yeah.
The only criticism I have of the film is kind of nitpicky, which is it felt like it was edited kind of choppy.
It was a little choppy.
Yeah. It felt like a youth group movie.
You could tell it wasn't high production value. But the message of it, my goodness, like you can't get a better message. That message needs to be put out today. Like, I get it. There's false teachers. I get it. There's heretical teachings. I get it. Like, there's people that do stupid things in the churches. But at the same time, like, can't we do what Jesus said and like taking the log out of our own life before we take the speck out of another's? Like, can't we, you know, get like the whole point of the Bible? I mean, we think about it's about, you know, that in the apostles' time, they thought about, you know, the Judaizers. It was like, hey, you got to be circumcised, be a Christian. But Paul's saying like, no, like that was meant to be inwardly, like a circumcision of the heart. Like even with the burnt offerings in the Old Testament, like it wasn't about killing and sacrificing and burning the animals. It was about the heart behind it. God could care less if they're out sinning and then sacrificing animals. Like he wanted them to change their hearts.
Yeah, he said that in Isaiah. Your festivals and your sacrifices don't mean anything to me because of the way you've been treating people.
Exactly. And I think that's where we need to come in and be like, yeah, I need to change. I need to change. Like, I'm what's wrong with the world. Not other, like, I get it. There's other believers, other Christians that piss you off. It's just reality. But you also have to look at your own heart and say, man, because you're only going to be held accountable for you.
Yeah.
God's not going to hold you accountable to some other guy way over here that you never met, but you've seen on a YouTube channel or heard on a podcast. He's going to hold you accountable for what you do. And what kind of thing can you nail on the cross? Like, what kind of thing can you die to self? Mm-hmm. And I just, that movie, man, was so beautiful.
Man, that makes me think of a bit of a tangent, but I've been pondering this for a little bit. Why is it that the Christians who are very messy, like they have very messy lives, they have very messy theology, but big hearts, they're the ones who seem to be doing the most good.
They're not nitpicking at stupid theological sayings or...
Maybe that's it, because...
It's kind of like what you talked about with the Duck Dynasty people. It's like their theology, it's not like they're heretical or anything, but maybe they're a little messy in it, but... They do stuff out in the world. Like they actually.
Yeah, they do stuff. They try to help people.
Yeah, they try to help people. Like.
Yeah, I like the specific person that I think about is Debbie Jones. She kind of took me in whenever she could when I was growing up. She was friends with my mom. Yeah. And she was a divorcee living on, I think, disability. She was a hoarder, so there were just trails through her house that you could get through between the stuff.
Yeah.
And sometimes she didn't pay the bills, so I was there once when the power went out. But anytime I showed up, she was so happy to see me. And she talked to me like I was her friend, even though I was like 11 when I started hanging out at her house. She always had something to feed me, and she was full of maybe not the best advice, but she loved Jesus and she loved me, and she made a huge difference in my life.
So you're saying she followed the two greatest commandments?
Maybe those are the only ones that matter.
To be fair, like there are like other things, but yeah.
They all
hinge on that for sure. So it's not like, yeah. Anyways, I don't want to get in too far of a tangent, but yeah.
Okay.
Like, she actually, you know, like, yeah.
Here's a smaller tangent because we've been talking about how Christian movies sometimes just beat you over the head with the moral.
Uh-huh.
She taught me not to lie, but not by beating me over the head with the moral.
How does she teach you not to lie?
So
telling you,
I had no problem lying when I was little because if I lied, I didn't get in trouble.
Ah,
right.
Parents don't find out, I'm good to go.
Yeah. Because it didn't matter what the truth was. It mattered what they believed was the truth.
Oh.
And I was not the kid to be believed. So if I lied, I did not get a whooping.
Mm.
So I had no problem lying.
And that's another thing, like, you know, like as parents, like I tell Carver and I tell them like, hey, and you know, Scott has taught me this, like, you know, if you tell the truth, your consequences will be severely less. Because you want your kids to come to you with the truth. You don't want them to do what you did.
What I was learning.
Right.
So I was at her house one day and I accidentally knocked a figurine off the shelf and it broke in two.
Mm-hmm.
So I found some tacky glue and glued it back together. But I was 11. I did not do a good job gluing it back together. So the next day I was at her house and she showed it to me and she said, Bethany, do you know what happened to this little house figurine? And I said, no, I don't. And she's like, huh, you know, it looks like it broke and somebody glued it back together. And I was like, wow, that's weird.
Why didn't you just leave it broke? Like, no, you must have went by and knocked the bookshelf and fell off. Like, what? Like,
listen, boy. I wasn't a criminal mastermind. I was a little girl. And she asked me directly, did you break it and glue it back together? And I said, no. And
wow,
she said,
you're a bad liar.
And she said, okay, Bethany, I believe you. Because you are such a good girl and you have a big heart. And I know that you wouldn't lie to me. I was in agony of guilt for days.
Dang. She knew that too.
I bet she did.
Oh, she had to.
But after I never lied again that I could help it after that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, I just... You know, like looking at these movies and, you know, trying to see they're trying to be perfect in it, like most of the movies that we watched. And I'm just reminded that we do serve a God, love a God, follow a God who's okay with the mess and the imperfection of it all.
Mm.
That, you know, you don't have to be a Caleb, because, you know, I could tell there's men listening to this and they've struggled with pornography and they're like, man, why am I not like Caleb and giving it up? It's, you know, where you're at right now, you know, God loves you. And yes, he wants you to change and to, you know, to keep struggling with the pornography and whatnot. But he thoroughly loves you and he's okay with entering into this mess and working with you. Mm. And same with, the Forge Kid and, you know, everything. Like, you know, it's okay if you don't have, you're not perfect like that kid after he comes to Christ. It's okay to be like, you know, not have all your apologetics figured out like a Josh Wheaton when he studied and he was going up against an atheist professor. You know, it's okay to not have it all figured out. Like,
mm-hmm.
Look at God's people in the Old Testament, the New Testament. Like, God works with people who don't have things figured out. And
he values honesty.
Yeah,
he wants an actual relationship with us, which means you have to be honest with him.
Yeah.
And that's why he loved David, I think. That's why David was a man after his heart. Because when you read the Psalms, they're honest.
Yeah, they're honest.
They're so brutally honest, like, that atheists use the Psalms to try and prove right. That God is wicked.
And I just want to say this, you know, worship leaders who... You know, I'm not trying to pick on you, but can we like get some songs that lament? Like, why does it all gotta be like, hey, God is awesome and everything's going right. I'm just perfectly happy. Like, I want some lamenting, dang it. Like, God, like, why does evil exist? Like, you know, like, I just like the lamenting, the sorrow of loss and pain. Like, I love that God's like, all right, David, you want to go here? All right, let's go here. You can shout, like, break the bones of my enemy. You mm-hmm. can shout that at me. Like, it's not too big for me. I get it. Like, I mean, people trying to kill you. Like, I understand.
Like, right. When at the end of Job, God says that Job did right and his friends didn't. The only difference between Job and his friends was Job was honest about what he was struggling with, and he was honest to God. Not, he wasn't just talking to other people. He took his concerns straight to God, whereas his friends were not being honest about their struggles, and they were chatting about it amongst each other.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think God values that. He values the struggles. Like, God, I don't have it figured out. I don't have my theology figured out. Like, you know, Great. Like, I'm struggling with the concept of eternal conscious torment. Like, can I just say that? I struggle with it. I'm almost leaning towards annihilationism because of what I'm studying. I'm struggling with it. I've struggled with the women in ministry. I've struggled with Calvinism and Arminianism. Like, but you know, at the end of the day, I'm trusting Jesus and in Jesus alone, and I'm trying to follow him in the best way that I can.
Yeah.
And I think God honors that versus, ooh, he didn't get it perfect. He didn't have perfect theology. Ooh.
Right. I'm sorry. You can't come into heaven because you misread this verse.
Yeah. I mean, I just.
That's not going to happen. Yeah. That's not going to happen. But we act like it does.
Yeah.
But like, that's what's going to matter.
Anyways, well, I think that was a great episode. And next, our next movie, we're going to actually be talking about two live action movies, Lilo and Stitch and Snow White. And I don't know what it'll be titled, but we're going to talk about.
Sounds like fun. It'll be a good time.
All right. And we're going to watch Snow White right after this recording. So
I'm excited.
Yeah, we've been waiting for it to come on Disney Plus because there's no way we're going to pay extra for that movie. Absolutely no way. Anyways.
As my good buddy G.K. Chesterton always says.
Of course, another Chesterton quote.
Truth, of course, must of necessity be stranger than fiction, for we have made fiction to suit ourselves.
I don't know what that means.
I just got to get used to interpreting my quotes. It means that, of course, truth is stranger than fiction, because we made up fiction to sound plausible to ourselves, but truth is actually like way crazier than what we imagine truth to be.
All right. Well,
okay, that interpretation didn't work. Go ahead.
Well, anyways, like my friend Blaine always says, after we get done at the movies, don't party too hard without me. What? Catch you guys later.
Bye now.
Whether it's at home or at the movie theater, Movie Night Apologetics exists
to show you the goodness of God in movies we watch.
I'm movie apologist Clark.
And I'm Bethany.
And this is Movie Night Apologetics.